This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
What the hell's going on out here?
Luke's scared because his eyelids are jammed and his old man's here. We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present. Is that about right?
That's right.
We're dealing with a lot of shit.
Anyone ever tell you look like a penis with a little hat on?
You're out of here!
Oh, no,
right
no, no,
now,
no,
Jimmy, I heard
you misunderstood
that!
Misunderstood.
Why? What do you mean, why? We're in the championship, aren't we? Well, that's what you wanted, wasn't it? Now, just behave yourselves and act like men.
I'm not much for giving inspirational addresses. The local press seems to think we'd save everyone a lot of time and trouble if we just went out and shot ourselves.
You play ball like a girl!
I think you're a loser.
I'm a bum!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the opening day edition of the Bleacher Bums. I'm one half of your team, Jimbo, here. Let me welcome in my colleague, Tony Hubert. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, I'm ready. I'm ready.
Well, we are, yeah. You got the King of Beers march going on over there. It's a, you know, as people know, we are here and right on the other side of St. Louis. So definitely Cardinal fans, but MLB fans across the board. And got to give a shout out to our friends to the north. Now, sometimes they're our friends, sometimes they're not. The Chicago Cubs, world champions. They start this year as champions with a big bullseye on them. So while I congratulate you on last year, as our good friend Fish says, everyone is tied for first currently.
That's true. It's also the first time in the history of Wrigley Field that on opening day they will welcome in a defending world champion.
So no Wrigley Field when they had won.
Okay. No, Wrigley Field opened not even for the Cubs, for the Chicago Whales of the Federal League.
The Federal League. That mm-hmm. sounds like putting on the foil and slap shot. The
kind
Federal
of.
League.
Okay. Kind of. The league only lasted like 2 years, Jim. But the 1908 win, not Wrigley Field.
Hmm. Interesting. Well,
and
either
they've
way.
And of course, because Game 7 was in Cleveland, they've never won one on Wrigley Field soil. They've, of course, lost a couple.
Sure.
But that you got to go back to 45 and 29 and 32 for those.
Well, the most important thing and the only thing that I guarantee you anybody from Chicago, anybody affiliated with Chicago cares about is that they start the 2017 MLB season as your World Series champs.
I know.
So, hey, enjoy it. You've got, what do we got, 6 months of owning it with a whole league trying to take it from you. Repeating is a really tough thing. I will tell you, they are uber talented. I mean,
oh damn, they're good.
They are deep. It's no surprise that everybody's picking them to win this division. But I also understand that a lot of people are also reminding us, you know, and the smart people, quote unquote, right, just how hard it is to win back-to-back World Series.
Well, you know, the Yankees have done it. Who else has done it recently? It's been tough. The Toronto Blue Jays did it back-to-back in the early 90s, and then the Yankees in the late 90s. But since the dawn of this century, Jim, there's been no repeats.
Well, it's not an easy thing to do. If you talk to the quote-unquote experts, they'll tell you the way baseball is now with the high energy given on the mound, some of that equates to the shortened offseason. You tend to see some of those things, you know, the hangover, I guess they call it. We shall see, right? Because I'm here to tell you, we see it firsthand, right? Like we know, like we've had this little run of dominance over the Cubs, so to speak, or not really the Cubs, but just kind of in our division for a while now.
Sure.
Here in St. Louis. This is the most talented Cubs team I've ever seen, and this is an extremely talented Cubs team across baseball. Now, there have been other teams that we have anointed World Series favorites before seasons and they don't work out. Most notably, you know, there was a year with Philadelphia where they had all, you know, they went out and got this guy and then they added it to this and you're going, holy cow, how's anybody going to beat them? Same thing with the Washington
Nationals.
The Nationals 1 year, it was like, how's anybody going to beat them? So there are teams that this, you know, comes across and then sometimes they don't even make the playoffs. So it is a tough thing. There's a lot of things that happen. Health is always interesting. New players, players that depart, things that you expect, but that's why you play the games.
Goddamn right. I mean, that's why opening day is so special.
Well,
because you know why? because the season's so long, there's always hope.
Sure.
You know, in the NFL, opening day, they've tried to make it a big thing. It's not. In the NHL right. and the NBA, opening day is just not like,
okay,
really
here we go.
A thing.
Yeah.
It's just here we go. And I know in a lot of cities across baseball, it's also a here we go thing.
Sure.
However, you and I grew up in an environment where it's akin to a national holiday. It's certainly a local holiday. And I've thought about this long and hard. Why is it so special in St. Louis versus other cities? And I think I've got some pretty good conclusions as to why. One is history, a history of winning, a history of stability in the franchise. Those are important. But a lot of cities and a lot of clubs have that. There's some other factors, though. I'm very convinced that it has a lot to do with your stadium and the stadium's location. You need a downtown location for sure. opening day to really work, because you need a place where people can go to and go to restaurants, bars, outdoor parks, or just – and I don't mean a parking lot – and congregate long hours before a game and long hours after a game. And, Jim, you can start going through the ballparks in Major League. You eliminate half of them right there.
Right.
That don't happen at Dodger Stadium. That's not going to happen at the Angels. That's not going to happen I don't think it's going to happen at Citi Field in New York.
Well, I think simply what you're saying is you allow a fan base to be a part of the game, even if they don't have a ticket to the game.
Yes.
And that
you don't
that,
need
right.
to go into the stadium to experience
to have a good time.
An opening day in St. Louis. You don't. Now, there's some cities that I think I would really like to be at an opening day in
sure.
to compare it. And the two at the top of my list are the north side of Chicago and Boston. And then there's some cities that I think could really get a good opening day vibe going after a couple of years. But here's what works against them, Jim. I almost think you have to be a medium or a small market for opening day to become a real thing, because you have to have all your local media absolutely behind it. And in New York or Los Angeles or San Francisco, that's going to be hard. But I do think a place like Seattle with the downtown ballpark
sure.
has got a shot. I do think a place like Minneapolis, Minnesota with the Twins with a downtown ballpark has got a real shot. I do think Detroit, even though Detroit's had a lot of negative stuff going on about it, their park is in a neat location. And if that area gets revitalized, plus it's a beautiful park, so is San Francisco. But if you have a stadium that's all it is a stadium and a big parking lot, you're never going to have the true opening day experience of a St. Louis. And then, secondly, Boston or Chicago. I really am eager to see what that vibe is out front, and especially at that intersection of what's the intersection here? Addison and Clark?
Clark.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see what that vibe is this year, because that, I think, Jim, even without a ticket, is worth going to when the Cubs open up. If you're a baseball fan, just take the L there, pony up at one of those bars all around the stadium, and just make a day of it.
Well, here's what you're going to get. We're fortunate enough to be doing the show here. We're going to be over there and going to be a part of the atmosphere. Before we get into the opening day, and we got an interesting show for you guys today, I want to remind you all to make sure you check us out at BleacherBumsPodcast.com. It's where you'll find the show. It's also the easiest way to subscribe. It is free. Just click on subscribe to the podcast. It'll walk you through based on your mobile provider. Very simple. You'll get a notification every time we release a show, which during the MLB season could be at any time. We're typically going to try to do our one main show a week. But Tony and I, we work together. We come in. We have the studio right here. Something interesting happens in the game of baseball, we're going to come on. We're going to talk about it. That leads us to how we stay connected with you. Twitter, we love it. It's our way of staying in contact with everybody out there that loves baseball. I don't care what team you root for. Doesn't matter what team I like. Doesn't matter what team you like. We all love the game of baseball. I love Twitter because it's like your excuse to go out there and say how you feel with no repercussion. 140 characters is an opportunity for you to say whatever you want to say with no repercussion. At Bums Podcast is where you'll find us. We promise you, if you like the game of baseball, if you are at all involved with loving the game of baseball and you follow us, we're going to follow you back. That leads us to Facebook. You can find us there, Bleacher Bums Podcast. Just type it in. Love, love, love to have you guys involved with us on all of our social media platforms. Just follow us. If you ever see anything from us, if you would share it, we would greatly appreciate it. That really, at the end of the day, is how we grow the show. Special thanks always goes out to lineupmedia.fm. quality growing podcast company. They understand that your entertainment time is valuable. They take it very serious. If you go to lineupmedia.fm, I guarantee you, if you're into podcasting, you're going to find another one that you like. You are changing the way you listen. You want to listen to what you want to listen to, when you want to listen to it, and how you want to listen to it. Check out lineupmedia.fm. I guarantee you, you'll find another podcast that you'll find interesting besides your friends here, the Bleacher Bums. All right, Tony, so we've kind of talked a little bit about the reigning champs as they have deserved our attention.
Hell yeah.
It just so happens that they're playing our beloved Cardinals, so they're going to be right here in St. Louis. We're going to get to be a part of ushering in a new year with them being the champs. But I wanted to talk a little bit about opening day in general for all of our baseball fans across the country, across the world, really. Opening day, I thought you did a great job of talking about the differences in opening days in different cities and why they are. Ultimately, what you were describing is why it is to certain people what it is, right?
Right.
But to me, and again, I'd love your take. To me, opening day is that whole thing of, A, we live in the Midwest, so opening day signals to me warmer weather's coming.
Mm-hmm.
The boys of summer are coming.
Yep.
Sitting around, it signifies something to me. And I love hockey. Like, this is my favorite time of year. We're going to have hockey and baseball going on at the same time. But what it signals to me is new hope for my favorite team. That is something that I believe goes on in every major league city across the country. And I'm talking about some of the teams that unfortunately have not had a lot of success, especially most recently. Okay, like obviously the Cubs, what a great story, right? 108 years, they didn't have any success. So obviously they're an example. Now they've got some great ownership and great management in there now and players. That could happen to a lot of teams where even though the fan base may not believe that. That's what it signals to me. That's what opening day means to me.
Well, take the Royals a couple years ago. Everyone kept saying for years and years, hey, the Royals are going to be good. Hey, the Royals are going to be good.
Yeah.
And it almost got to be the boy who cried wolf because, yeah, we've all heard it. Yeah, yeah, the Royals are going to be good. And then suddenly, Jim, they were good.
They were good.
And yeah. It was fun because I remember I would go over to Kansas City. I like their park. But again, it's a baseball stadium in a parking lot, not very conducive to an opening day unless you're
right,
a tailgater.
Right.
And look, who tailgates at baseball? Only Brewer fans, to my knowledge, really.
Right.
And I remember telling my son, Cardinals were wiping them out one Sunday. You know, it just the game's not even close. And he said something, and I said, you know, though, Luke, this isn't fun for them. Look at all these people here. This isn't good for baseball. The Royals haven't been good for 20-plus years. When I was young, this is one of the great teams.
Yeah, it was great.
And you know, you're like, man, maybe there's no hope. Maybe there's no hope. You know, because when here's the sad thing. When opening day becomes hopeless in the minds of fans, that's a bad sign. It's a bad sign. Because if you don't have hope and the team starts bad, like the Royals did many a time in the past 20 years, you're done for the year. It's over. Boy, but when your team suddenly gets on a 6-1, 7-0 first week or gets out to 10 games over 500 suddenly by the end of April, it changes your whole outlook on the summer for the fans in that city.
Well, and look at any of the teams that have not had a lot of success lately. The word that they like to use is rebuilding, right?
Yeah.
Now, I guess if you are looking for eternal hope, you can look to our friends to the north. They went through a rebuilding process.
Now, that's true.
The interesting thing there was is it's a little bit easier to go through the rebuilding process if, A, you go out and hire one of the brightest, youngest GMs in the game.
Yeah.
And you have money.
Yeah.
It's a little bit easier to do.
Otherwise, you're a farm system build out. You can't supplement it through free agency or any other thing like that. So, you know, not that it can't happen. It has. And look, the Royals have a world championship. The Cubs have a world championship. Two organizations that did it in two, I think, rather distinct ways, even though both did build through their systems. But it's, you know, it's not the New York Yankees. We're going to buy it. It's not the Red Sox. We're going to buy it. We're going to overpay. And even they have gotten away from that. So, you know, opening day. You know what I want, Jim? My heart of hearts.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. Here's what I'd like. There's two holidays I think we're missing in this country.
Well, I know where you're going to go with this, and I'm going to agree with you 100%.
The first one is let's move President's Day to the day after the Super Bowl, or okay. let's back the Super Bowl up another week. Whatever we need to do.
Whatever we need to do.
I don't want to go to work the Monday morning after a Super Bowl.
Neither does 3/4 of the country.
Let's get that legislation passed. That's a bipartisan thing I think we can all agree on. Well, two.
Why can't we celebrate presidents on that day?
Two. The first Monday of April should never be a working day in the United States of America. Ever. Here's how this day should go.
Well, it can't be April. It would have to be the day after Major League Baseball plays their first game of the night.
Well, they're going to play Sunday night.
Okay,
because they got the television. And I'm okay with Sunday night. I kind of lament that Cincinnati doesn't get the first official
Well, you know, the old
game.
Historical thing, sure.
Right, I kind of lament that, but sure. There's even a way around that.
Right.
I do like the idea of the World Series champions being in prime time on Sunday night to start your
As
season.
As it should be.
That's fine. I'm confused as to why the Cubs have to come to St. Louis rather than open in their own park, but it's okay.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
I kind of would like to see the pageantry of them getting their rings and whatnot, even though that pains me to say it. You know, look, it's happened, it's here, we got to deal with it, right? But I'd kind of like to see that. That kind of kicks off
the
year.
Is that not set before, though? I mean, when does that schedule
Schedules
come out?
Are set the year. Like, the 2018 schedule will probably be published around August 1st. This year, 2017.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. I mean, this just worked out.
It just worked out.
Well, because they moved it to the Sunday night game.
Right. Because they can shift.
Right.
So then what I want is the next day to be a national holiday for two reasons. One, we've got baseball opening day. And
across the league.
Yes.
Yes.
And I don't want this only some teams play. No.
Everybody
play. I want everybody playing. I want the games to start at 11 a.m. Central Time.
Yes.
I want every game... We're going to have
we can go on the 3 hours.
Because someone played the night before, we can probably reduce it to 14 games.
Well, yeah, those teams wouldn't play.
Okay. We're going to have, every 3 hours, we're going to have four games across the networks, just like the day one of the NCAA tournament. So you can flip through everybody. And we're going to have baseball all the way up and through the NCAA championship in basketball, which generally tips off at 8:20 Central Time.
Okay,
And if I can have a late West Coast game after that, brilliant. But I need that day off. I needed a national holiday. I don't care what you call it, baseball, call it Sports Day America. I don't give a damn. But we need that holiday.
I'll take it. I like it. I like where you're going with this.
The NCAA tournament has made itself what it is because you can watch every game if you have almost a regular basic cable package. Why should baseball be no different on opening day?
No, I'm with you. I'm going to go with you on this one. I think if I'm going to take a day off work, I want it to be able to do something that I enjoy doing. Now, we're going to have to accept the fact that not everybody watches baseball, right? But we're going to get a day off in April, okay? People can do what they want to do. We're going to be off school, too. There's the other thing.
That's what I mean. You're off school.
We're going to be off school so the kids can watch baseball.
Yes.
All right. So let's add in that we're going to make them watch. No, I know we can't do that, but...
Hey, you put it on. Look, ESPN learned this a long time ago. You know, because the college football leagues would argue with ESPN and say, why are you putting the SEC on against us? And they said, don't worry, your ratings will rise. Don't worry, your rate. And sure enough, guess what? They did. Because everyone flips back and forth. And then whatever's good, they stay with. If the game's not so good, And if you're a hometown honk and just want to watch your team, well, they're there for you anyway. It's perfect.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think opening day, to me, it's special, right? It's always going to be special to me. Something I know you and I were excited about doing today, and we did a little homework for our listeners out there, okay? We're going to go back and forth a couple times here for the remainder of the show because it's one thing to have opening day. And the reality of it is I'm going to go watch my favorite team play Sunday. I don't know how good the weather is going to be. I don't know if they're going to win or lose. It's like the song says, if they don't win, it's a shame. And that's fine, but I'm going to love watching baseball. And that's the key term is that I love baseball as much as I love the Cardinals. There have been some interesting opening day performances throughout the game of baseball. Tony and I are both going to pick out a couple and just talk about them a little bit here. And I'm going to pick a couple things that we want to talk about. But the reality of it is there's been some interesting things that have happened on opening day. Now, some of them were events that were kind of foreshadowing things to come. I'm going to start, Tony.
You start this.
I'm going to start because of the foreshadowing and because it's close to home.
All right.
Opening day, March 31st, 1998.
I know this one.
Okay. Mark McGwire takes Ramon Martinez deep on opening day.
Yep.
Fans could not have known what was in store. By season's end, he has 70 home runs.
By Memorial Day, he had 25.
Yes. So to know, to possibly sit there on opening day and see him do it and do all that kind of stuff, you know what's interesting is when I think about that and I think about going through that period when McGwire was doing that, we were at a low point in the game of baseball.
Yes, we were.
From a fan perspective.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't good.
The Sammy Sosa, Mark McGwire home run chase is documented.
Look, as tainted,
it changed it.
As tainted as it may have been.
And it's just interesting how you sit there on opening day. And I remember the day. Okay. I remember watching and him hitting the home run. And, you know, we were all intrigued by getting McGwire. We had just gotten him, right, recently.
But this was like, it was, remember that the context was we didn't know how the club was going to be.
But we knew he was going to hit.
With that at bat. And the fact that he did it on opening day, it was just a clear signal that the chase was on. Because I will tell you this, Jim. Remember in 1997, the previous year, he had signed an extension after the trade, and that night he hit a home run.
Oh, the place went bananas.
Yes.
A crying, you know, because they put money in there. He had a friend that was abused.
That's right.
Remember that? The Cardinals. And
well,
he,
because that press conference. Yes, he had a press conference earlier in the day. I don't know if you were at it. I was at it where it was emotional, not because of Mark McGwire signing, but because of just what you were talking about and what he was going to do in terms of a foundation to help, you know, with abuse. And he had a home run that night. But as 98 opened up, and clearly it was like, okay, you know, here we go. This is a shot. That home run that was a big signal that the chase was on, and it didn't let up.
No, it did not. And the thing is, you know, you think back to that whole time and what you're thinking and what you're hoping and all the things that you're wanting for your team. But I remember, you know, for Mark McGwire to basically bare his soul to Cardinal fans, you know, openly, this giant man, larger than life figure, weeping openly. Boy, the St. Louis fans just ate that up. I mean, it was a match made in heaven, so to speak, as they would say. And as they also say, the rest was history. Now, obviously, the sad part is the taintedness of the whole thing with the PEDs. That's a discussion for another day. But I think we are both in agreement that the foreshadowing and the thinking ahead of what happened, it was obviously a magical season. And again, you can think whatever you want to think, okay? I don't know what your relationship is with baseball, but if you have a relationship with baseball and it's anywhere since 1998, your relationship formed, you can thank Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa.
Yeah.
Because if chances are, if you weren't a fan before that, or you may have been a fan before that and losing interest, these guys saved it.
They reignited. It is. No, it is. It is. There's no need to apologize for it.
All right, you pick one.
I'm going next.
Okay.
Now this one, and we thank Bleacher Report for, they did a nice job putting these things together. Jim and I both came upon these independently.
The same article, interestingly
enough. And Bleacher Report knocked about 7 or 8 of them that I was looking for, but didn't have the exact details. Well done. This one, in my opinion, there's a bunch of big ones. This one is significant to baseball and the meteoric rise of baseball starting after the Black Sox scandal.
Okay.
It's 1923. It's April 18th.
Okay.
Yankee Stadium has been built and is opening officially on this date. Now, here's what fans sometimes forget. When Babe Ruth was purchased from the Red Sox, after the 1919 season, and then he came to New York, the Yankees played at the Polo Grounds in 1920, 1921, 1922. So they were the co-tenants of the Giants. That's the Giants stadium. It's not the Yankees. And the Yankees aren't necessarily the big deal in New York at that time. Because prior to this, they were the highlight. They hadn't done a lot of winning. But Ruth set it on fire from 1920. He certainly used the short porch at the Polo Grounds to his effect, so much so that Yankee Stadium was built with a left field short porch as well I'm sorry, a right field short porch as well for the left-handed hitters. Because, you know, not that they had Gehrig in 23, but they had other guys who could stroke the ball, and Gehrig, of course, would come and benefit. So opening day of Yankee Stadium against the former team, the Red Sox, Ruth, three-run shot, Yankees win 4-1. And from that moment on, because the Yankees go on to win the World Series, the house that Ruth built, he christened it day one. And this is in an era when, you know, you weren't necessarily sold out for opening day or anything like that. But new stadium, huge crowd, and they could pack them in back in the day at Yankee Stadium. Because you had the bleachers and everything in center. You know, you could just keep throwing people in there. That is a big, big deal. Because it's in front of the New York press, which means basically it's in front of the national press. And the game's biggest star in the game's best new jewel of a stadium smokes one for a winner on opening day.
Well, you know, obviously you know how I feel about Babe Ruth.
Oh, yeah.
He's my favorite player. I'll argue he's the greatest player to ever play. Now, of course, that always begs the conversation to start with people saying, well, you know, the better athletes today, they're this and that. I think you're selling the guys of the past year short. Well, these guys today have this, this, and this. And I always say, well, okay, well, then he would have been a part of this era. Just no different than I think you could have taken Bryce Harper today and put him back there, and I think he would have succeeded without all the things that he has today. That's what I believe. I'm a big believer
good
in
players
athletes,
are gonna play.
Athletes play. Yeah. Talent plays. Players play. So I'm with you on that. A very significant because, again, we're talking about something that transcends one specific team. Babe Ruth was a iconic player. Something had been done with him that wasn't normal, right? I mean, he was sold like a piece of meat, basically, right?
Well, players were sold
but that was
big sale.
Sure. In Boston, boy, they lived with that curse, right, for quite some time, breaking it, same as the Cubs.
Yeah.
So yes, I'm with you. That is a good one. I like it. Very impactful. And again, if you're going to go across the game of baseball, I don't think you can find one. I want to talk about the big one, but I think we save that one for last.
We'll save it for last.
We'll save number one for last.
Hit me with another one.
So I'm going to hit you with another one. I'm going to say, significantly for me, was baseball returns in 1995.
That was big.
You know, only because we're talking about what McGuire did earlier, and it was a direct result of what happened in 94. No playoffs, no World Series, no free agent action, no offseason trades, legal labor strife. That's the definition of the day. We're talking about a game that we love impacted by an impasse of labor agreement. Try explaining that to your kids.
You can't.
How do you explain that one?
You can't.
It's a baseball game.
Go play. You can't. It's a blight.
It
really is, Jim. I remember sitting in 1994 and just stunned. Like, really? We're going to throw this away?
Yeah, unbelievable. I just unreal.
I mean, you might as well tilted the earth on off its axis for me.
It is what it is. We'll live with it. But at the end of the day, too, through all, what do I always say? Through adversity, his character is formed. Sometimes you got to find some low points to have some high points. I like where the game is today to a certain degree. There are things I don't like about the game of baseball. I don't like free agency. I get it. Okay.
Yeah.
But this is a common sense thing. I think free agency hurts baseball. I understand it helps these guys make a lot of money. But I also think it's hard for people to fall in love with players. And we're going through something here in St. Louis with Yadier Molina where, think about this, he may be the only, we're talking about three players in this historic franchise. If Yadier stays, three players that are Hall of Fame guys, because I'm going to include Yadier in that, that went start to finish with the Cardinals. In this historic franchise, three players, Stan Musial, Bob Gibson, Yadier Molina.
Right.
I had kind of forgot.
Here's the thing. You
everybody thinks Lou Brock.
Yeah, you can't put him in there.
You can't put him in there.
He's a Cub first.
So anyway, I there are things I don't like about it. But I also understand that there are things bigger than just what I like about the game. So I understand it. I don't like that fact. And if you ever ask me again if I think these idiots should ever, ever even consider doing it. The only thing that came out of that was that they probably won't ever let it happen again. Right. That's the only thing I can say.
Right.
Okay, what do you got?
Okay, I've got this one because for a long time in my life, I never realized this is how this occurred. I think most older baseball fans remember exactly home run number 715 by Hank Aaron. Okay?
All right.
What I never knew until watching a documentary on Hank some years ago was that the tying one, number 714 to tie Ruth, came on opening day in Cincinnati in 1974 in his first at bat in his first swing.
Huh. Okay, yeah, that's right. Okay, yeah.
Which creates quite a dilemma if you're the manager of the Braves.
Yeah.
Because suddenly there's like 26 innings of baseball left, and you might break a record in Cincinnati, and you really need to get back to Atlanta to break this record.
Yeah, I forgot about that. That's interesting. You know, and we talk about foreshadowing, right? And you think about this stuff, and you're sitting here going, you know, how do we do this? How do we do this? What was it? Did Ichiro did not get his 3,000th hit at Petco. He got it in Cleveland or something, yeah. Right? Or Minnesota, somewhere.
There was another big one, wasn't there? Wasn't there a chance in St. Louis? It was a long shot.
Well, Ken Griffey Jr. hit his 500th home run on Father's Day.
Wasn't it somebody could have hit number 500 and someone could have got hit number 3,000 in the same night?
Yeah.
We needed like two home runs and a 4-for-4 performance.
Well, we need something.
But it was there.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I remember Jack Buck talking about calling the McGuire home run.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, well, it should be Jack. It should da-da-da-da-da. And he just said, you know, I just want to be in the moment, you know. And
right.
He said he thought about the call. And I think it's probably something he regretted is that he kind of had something scripted. I mean, you know, after he said what he said, then he let it take over the emotion and everything of just being in the moment. And I felt that was better than the initial call. But, you know, for me, that's how I choose to like the game is the way the game happens spontaneously.
Right.
So, you know, managers and franchises thinking about doing things so that they happen in home parks for fans, while I understand that, you know, I find it also to be a little hokey. You know, if you want to use football, what about when Brett Favre hit the ground and Strahan got a sack without even sacking a guy?
No,
see, to me,
that's not good.
If I was Michael Strahan, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, it's not real.
You know,
we all know it's
so
not real.
So that's kind of where I'm at on that.
Yeah,
but no, it's good.
I mean, can you I don't know who owned the Braves at that time. I don't think it was Ted Turner quite yet. But they had to be going, oh, damn it.
Yeah,
Because I remember the controversy in 84, am I right? 84 or 85, Rose, 4,000,
yeah,
or the tie Cobb breaker.
Yep.
You know, because that's another one. He tied Cobb, no pun intended,
yes,
in Chicago with a home run at Wrigley.
Yeah, okay.
And then they're like, whoa,
okay.
So he sat out until they went to Cincinnati, and he got it, I think, off Eric Schau.
Yeah.
You know, in the Padres.
That does sound right. And I get it. That's fine. Because, you know, sometimes when these things are happening, that's all they really have going on as a franchise.
Yeah.
So they're using them. You know, we want our guy to get his due in front of the crowd. But it, you know, it's understandable. We're going to talk about the most, you know, the most memorable opening day here in just a second. Before we do that, though, I want to say there's one more, like an honorable mention.
Yeah.
Only because it's something that'll never happen again.
Tuffy Rhodes?
No.
Oh.
Walter Johnson throwing 13 innings opening day.
No chance.
And winning 1-0.
You will never see that again.
13 innings. Now, here's the deal. He didn't throw 13 innings and everybody go, oh, my God, this guy only threw 120. Let me tell you something. He allowed 10 hits and walked 3 and struck out 6.
Whoa, 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 whoa. 6? That's it?
He struck out 6.
The train?
He walked 3. And he allowed 10 hits.
This is not one of his best days then.
Well, but my point is,
he threw 13.
God, he had to have thrown 200 pitches.
Easily. Well, 6 walks, I can tell you right there, there's 24.
He had to have thrown 6.
A minimum of 24 right there, Jim.
So
that's 1/8 of the way to 200.
That's 4-0.
Right there. Right. That's minimum.
So, again, I only say that now because we live in a day and age that when a guy gets to 90 pitches, they're ready to get him out of the game. I just find that unbelievable.
I think we've seen – that's 13 innings complete, right? Now, you know Miller Furniture around here?
Yeah.
Okay. God, I'm forgetting his name now. But the owner, one of the co-owners of that, he was a baseball player, pitched for the Cubs.
Oh, okay.
And he was in like one of those 19-inning duels one year.
That's amazing.
19.
Well,
I mean that's just come on. No, I'm sorry. Pitch for Detroit.
Well, again, it's just something you'll never see. And listen,
Jim,
here's the thing:
we hardly see 9 innings.
Well, we're talking about opening day, but you know this happened at times back then. They just hey, here's the ball, go get it. You
just
know,
went.
They used to say when they'd come to try to get the ball from Bob Gibson, they didn't care. You weren't getting it from.
Well, there's
him,
but, another opening day one about Jenkins and Gibson.
Yeah.
Where they both duel it into. But I can remember, first of all, a complete game is so rare. When is the last time you saw a starter go 10?
Well, it was the World Series. What's Jack Morris?
And before that,
who knows?
Joaquin Andujar one night went 10. That's remarkable.
Yeah,
it's
I don't remember anybody talking about a pitch count.
No, never uttered at all.
Well,
you'll never see it. It'll never happen.
Well, this one happened on opening day, so it garners our attention. All right, the number one moment, I think we both agree, and I think most of baseball would agree.
George Taco Bell.
This is without question, only because it transcends life as much as baseball. And that was, very simply, on April 15th, 1947, Jackie Robinson takes the field for the Dodgers and breaks the color barrier. I just got chills saying it.
Well, because it gives new meaning to the word opening day.
Well, because think about this. You know, racism was alive and well back then. It's alive and well today.
Oh, it was okay. Beyond alive and well. But it was in full swing.
It's one thing for a man's opinion or thoughts to be of that nature. It's another thing for them to operate in a way where it actually affects somebody and what they can and can't do on something that now, especially, and even then it would have to me or anybody, it seems so wrong. Really, at the end of the day. We look back on baseball and that era of baseball, and we think of all the African-American players that did not get to play in the league. That would have made the league better. And frankly, even if it didn't make the league better, it just was wrong. Okay, and by no means, and I think the small article does a great job of pointing out, make no mistake about it, Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier and playing on April 15th, 1947, you know, did not eliminate the specter of racism from American life. If anything, it intensified it for quite some time in a game that we love.
Right.
But
And it certainly intensified it in some cities that he would visit in his first trip through the National League.
But as all things prove to be historic, as some things that happen within a game of baseball can be life-changing, this is an ever-changing moment. And again, you know, to compare it to another event, if you think about the 1980 U.S. Olympic hockey team, which I think is the greatest sports moment in the history of sports, this would be right there for me, not from a sporting, this would be from a life thing. I mean, I think Jackie Robinson's ability to handle the situation, as dictated by a lot of the stories and things you read of Branch Rickey feeling he was the right person to do that because he could handle the stuff going, not the baseball part of it, right, the mental part of it, which took a very special person. But it was what was going on in the world at the time that made the United States victory in 1980 at Lake Placid so special. Yeah. What was going on in America, okay, I assure you, in 1947 with racism and with the way things were being done, this is, you know, epic, really.
It's epic for, I think, a couple reasons. There was a buildup to this, you know.
Well, sure.
Jackie was a known commodity at UCLA.
Sure.
In all sports.
Right.
Okay.
This wasn't just – yeah, you're right. This is not just a baseball thing. I mean, he had shown his athletic ability, but also his character.
He's one of the premier athletes in the United States, in the world at this point, okay? I mean, you're on UCLA football, track, baseball. You got it going on, even in 1942, 43, let's say. Signed to the contract – you know, goes to play in Montreal minor league, international league. I don't know if they called it AAA back then, but it's the equivalent of AAA. And works towards it the whole year. Branch Rickey knows he's going to pull the trigger, and he's going to pull the trigger to start the season. And this is a big one because, you know, back then, I don't know that you necessarily always had huge crowds. So Brooklyn hosting the Boston Braves April 15th on a Tuesday, Ebbets Field. Attendance, 26,600. Big crowd. Good crowd for that time. And I think Ebbets Field probably only held, what, 30-something, if that. Jackie goes 0-for-3 with a run scored. And he's on his way. But, you know, the thing is, he didn't do anything remarkable on the field that day. Well, right? He grounded into a double play and, you know, things like that.
Nothing remarkable on the field.
But just as, you know, and the game, again, how about this? Game took 2 hours, 26 minutes. And look at the line. He plays first base. That's another one. I think most people think that he started at second. No, he
did a good job in the movie of 42 explaining how that happened.
Why he was at first. Yeah. Yes, because Eddie Stanky's at second. Bats, everyone, I think a lot of people incorrectly assume he led off. He did not. He batted second behind Stanky and in front of Pete Reiser and Dixie Walker. Look at this lineup for the Dodgers. I mean, a lot of these names, I don't know.
Right.
Gene Hermansky, I don't know.
Well, you know Pee Wee.
Bruce Edwards, I don't know. Spider Jorgensen, I don't know. Pee Wee, I know. And
sure.
Starting pitcher that day was Joe Hatton for the Dodgers. And he's going up against the Boston Braves, who, if I start reading you names, you tell me if you've ever heard of some of these guys other than their starting pitcher. Dick Culler, Johnny Hopp, Mike McCormick,
mm-hmm.
Bob Elliott, Dan Littweiler, Earl Torgerson, Phil Massey, Connie Ryan.
Nope.
Johnny Sane.
You've
heard that one.
Johnny Sane, referenced quite often by a lot of people in the pitching world, especially the great Leo Mazzoni, his mentor.
Yes.
So that's an interesting name. That's an interesting blast from the past.
And keep in mind, the trivia question, first major leaguer to deliver a pitch to Jackie Robinson?
Johnny Sane. Very interesting. You know, and again, I choose that moment only because, Tony, I think you have very eloquently put it very simply. It gives new meaning to the word opening day.
You introduced a new talent pool to the game of baseball for the first time in decades.
And you
made the game better. Anytime you get a new down, and we talked about this before, it's why we love the World Baseball Classic. Because we want to see more players from Korea, Taiwan, Japan develop. We want to see more great Venezuelans, Dominicans, Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Mexicans. Keep it coming.
Well, I will tell you
this. I wish Brazil and Argentina were into baseball.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot here before we go. We're going to each give real quick our own mine's going to really blow your mind. We're going to give our own opening day scenario thoughts of things that have passed. Mine is going to be interesting. I'll go first so you can think for a minute. Because this is what's funny about mine.
Same.
You're going to love this, okay? Mm-hmm. You know I love the Cardinals.
Yes, I
love baseball in general.
Yes, I do.
So this is going to show you how much I love baseball.
No, it's not Cardinal related.
It was my first day taking customers as my role at Anheuser-Busch when I got promoted. I had customers at the game with me. I wasn't just there. I had always been at opening day, but this time I've got people with me. The Cardinals had a new reliever named Jason Mott who threw it almost 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, he's a flamethrower.
He was a flamethrower. Okay, he was the new closer. He had just won the job. And I remember watching the game on opening day, and I believe it was Ryan Ludwig hit a home run to put the Cardinals up. And as he did it in the eighth inning, you could see Jason Mott warming in the bullpen. And all I could feel was the energy in the stadium building. Here's this guy in the bullpen throwing the ball 100 miles an hour. The Cardinals, it was a cold day. The weather wasn't great. The Cardinals take the lead on this home run. The place goes crazy, right? And here comes Jason Mott out of the bullpen. Blaring. And I'm a theatrical guy, right? Like, I have to be there to see the Clydesdales. I've got to be there.
So you're on board with Trevor Hoffman,
right,
Mariano Rivera.
Yes.
Yeah.
So mind you now, my couple of my favorite things as I get chills thinking about it are the Clydesdales coming around the track on opening day. rest in peace, Stan Musial. Stan standing up with help from people and taking the Phantom swing.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes me almost tear up and chills. I love the theatrical part of baseball. The door opens to let Jason Mott out of the bullpen, and Stranglehold blares across the stadium. The place is in a frenzy, mind you. And here he comes, Flame throwing it up on the mound, and he proceeds to get shelled by the Pittsburgh Pirates in the top of the ninth inning, and we lose. So that is one of my unbelievable memories from opening day.
I've got a couple, and I'll try to go quick. Ozzie Smith is retired. Willie McGee has come back to the St. Louis Cardinals. Ozzie Smith is in the broadcast booth. Willie gets the game winner, I think, in the bottom of the ninth. And Ozzie goes falsetto, shall we say, on the air, if you remember that one.
Mm-hmm.
Bush 3 opens, and the first home run in the park on opening day would be hit by Milwaukee's Bill Hall. The first Cardinal home run would come off the bat of, do you remember who this was?
No.
Mark Mulder.
That's right.
But Pujols would homer.
Yes.
In the very first day of Bush, just like Ruth homered in the very first day of Yankee Stadium.
Right.
And wait for it. Both clubs would initiate their new home ballparks
with World Series
wins.
Right. That's right.
There were three parallels there. I always thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
I remember sixth grade opening day after the Cardinals had been world champions. We were allowed our sister, you know, Catholic school here, Jim, Sister Richard, rolled in the TV, and we watched the Pirates dismantle the Cardinals, 1983. But it was fun. And then I worked at the ballpark as a errand kid. They call them runners in St. Louis. I'm sure other ballparks have them. But you teenage kids, and you're hired to do all sorts of odd jobs around the park. One opening day, they sent they sent one of the runners out looking for the key to the batter's box. One of the greatest pranks ever.
Kind of like when you work at a pizza joint and they send you to Pizza Hut to get the pepperoni slicer back.
Get the pepperoni slicer back. The kid, not only was he on the field looking for the key to the batter's box, he made it to the umpire's room asking for the key to the batter's box.
That's pretty good.
And the my first opening day as an employee, I'm 17 years old, and I have to run a whole bunch of stuff down to the clubhouse. I come out of the clubhouse, and the first person who ever introduces himself to me is Jack Buck.
Wow.
Coming around the corner, "Hey, young man, what's your name?" I can't do a good Jack.
That was
Buck.
Good.
I can't.
I thought that was good.
But you know, I didn't know Jack was colorblind, so the pants coat combo were not really, you know, let's just say it was garish. But I was like, "Well, did you see what Mr. Buck was wearing?" And someone quickly said, "Tony's colorblind." Oh, okay, that makes sense. But yeah, I mean that's a thrill. I mean, you're 17 years old, opening day. And Jack Buck stopping you, saying, you know, "Hey, young man," and, you know, and okay, and where do you go to the whole bit, Jim? Where do you go? Everything. That's just, you never forget that stuff.
Well, you know, everybody out there, whoever you are, wherever you are, you have your own fond memories of opening day somehow, some way, some form. What we would ask you to do is to just enjoy it. Live it through everybody else's eyes as well, and enjoy it for what it is. And that is a wonderful game played by men that act like children. And if everybody did that, and if we all enjoyed it that way, I think we would have a great game.
Let's just get this national holiday thing.
Yeah, that's
rolling,
right.
Please.
Let's get it going. We sure could use it. Our good friend Benji Molina, through his show Two Birds on a Bat, has started the uprising in St. Louis. I don't know if you saw this or not, but he went on their Twitter, which is at Birds on a Bat Show. He wrote a note that says, "To the bearer, or please allow the bearer of this note to be off work Monday."
I did see that.
As he was having his own holiday, attending opening day for our Cardinals, signed Benji Molina. Remember, Welcome Back Cotter, whenever
Epstein's mom.
Please excuse little Juan from school as he wasn't feeling well, signed Epstein's mother. The greatest thing ever. But Benji Molina has decided to let the whole city of St. Louis and the surrounding communities off work Monday so that they can attend the game.
God bless him.
If you're in St. Louis, download the note, take it to your boss, and according to Benji, everybody's off work. I think this is a great start.
From two Cardinal fans to our friends to the north, seriously, to all our Cubs fans we know, we know a lot, Jim, because we grew up in Illinois, even though we're Cardinal fans. Enjoy this opening day, Cubs fans, because you never know when you're going to get to open again like this. Nothing's guaranteed, so make the most of it.
Yes, yes, make the most of it. So, good stuff, man. I enjoyed this.
And like I said, it, baby.
It gets me excited. I mean, we're 2 days away. I know where I'm going to be. I will be the, you know, I'm like that. I got to be the first one there. Like, there's going to be a million people in downtown St. Louis Sunday, but I got to be the first one there. The game's not till 7. I'm going to be there like at 9 a.m. I'm ready to go.
That's beautiful. You know what
I
mean?
I am ready to go. So, anyway, my man, I'm enjoying it. I'm loving it. I'm so ready. And at the end of the day, you know, welcome to the 2017 MLB season. For the Bleacher Bums, I'm one part of your team, Jimbo. That's my good friend and co-host, Tony Hubert. Remember to check us out, bleacherbumspodcast.com. Of course, follow us on Twitter, at Podcast Baseball. Go to Facebook and type in Bleacher Bums Podcast. We'd love for you guys to be a part of the show. We always take comments, questions, anything through Twitter. If you think you've got a great topic, send it to us through there. Remember, if you're a baseball fan, we're going to follow you. Welcome to the 2017 baseball season. We will see you next week.
Today's show is presented by DaVinci Smart Drink. Order yours now at lineupmedia.fm/DaVinci. DaVinci, excite better thinking.
Need a mental boost? DaVinci Smart Drinks were designed with professional thinkers in mind. With key ingredients shown to improve cognitive function and increase mental energy, DaVinci Smart Drinks excite better thinking. Drink a DaVinci. Let it go to your head.
This podcast was a presentation of lightupmedia.fm.